Together, if we could briefly, and turn to Genesis chapter number 26, if you are able. Thank you for that. Of course, just a reminder: we do have the patch, the pirate for the children, and encourage them to go there. Thank you. And well, that's not you. So, right there, there you go. We are starting, as we always do during the summer. We're going to look at the family. And so we're going to start that tonight, and for several weeks we'll look at that. Genesis chapter 26 and verse number 1. Read the first 11 verses, we'll pray together, and then we'll let you be seated. Verse 1, it says, "And there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar. And the Lord appeared unto him and said, Go not down into Egypt. Dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed all the nations of the earth be blessed. Because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." So God is telling him to stay where he's at. He's reiterating unto him the covenant which he gave to Abraham and said, this blessing's going to come to you. Just stay where you're at. And he's given him the promise and all of that. Verse 6, "And Isaac dwelt in Gerar. And the men of the place asked him of his wife and said, and he said, she is my sister. For he feared to say, she is my wife, lest, said he, the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon. And it came to pass, when he had been there a long time, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. And Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety, she is thy wife. And how sayest thou, she is my sister? And Isaac said unto him, because I said, lest I die for her. And Abimelech said, what is this thou hast done? One of the people might lightly have lain with thy wife, and thou shouldest have brought guiltiness upon us. And Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he that touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. And let's pray. Father, thank you for loving us. Thank you for the opportunity that we have to hear your word tonight. In our brief few minutes, I pray you'd encourage us in the subject we have beforehand. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. You may be seated. Of course, as we start our family series each night, because we have family nights, I'm going to strive to be short. I don't go real long anyhow, but I'm going to strive to be short and get us out about 6 o'clock so we can do the fellowship and all that thing. But we do want to look at the family. The reason we need to look at the family and the marriage relationships is because most of us, and I would put myself in this category, did not grow up in a Christian family. And so, by the way, my kids would probably say they didn't grow up in a Christian family either, but you know how that is. But most of us didn't grow up in a Christian family, and so we didn't see that. Many of us in here, I would put myself in that number, we grew up in a broken family. We did not have both parents in the home, and so, you know, we don't have a living, vibrant example we saw in our homes of a Christian or a semi-Christian family. You know, they say, you know, a lot of people use the thing, oh, you know, I grew up in a dysfunctional family. I think everybody grew up in a dysfunctional family, some just more dysfunctional than others. So the point is, we need to learn about the family. We need to learn about marriage, because it's not something that came natural to us. I remember when I was engaged, before I got married, we got married right after the school semester ended. And so I was working full-time, going to school full-time, and working in ministry the full time of the week, and didn't have any really free time. But those last 3 months of the school year before I got married, we had a 40-minute ride to work. I worked third shift, and so I just got books on marriage, and as we were in marriage and family, and as I was driving to work in the dark, I brought a flashlight, and I would read through these books, because even though I had a lot of other things going on, that was the only free time, and I'm trying to prep myself for the family and do the best I can to at least get that in my mind, because I didn't, you know, my mom was great, but it was just, it is what it is. That's how I grew up. I didn't see it, and I want to learn it. And many of us are like that. And even if we're not, we need to learn it. Say, well, I'm not married and I'm young. Learn the principles now, then you won't have to go through some of the stuff that some of us have had to go through, because we didn't learn or see that when we were younger. And so that's where we're at. We're calling the series A Family Portrait, and we're trying to find out what a Christian family looks like. Many say that there's little difference today between the typical family and the Christian family in the terms of how it plays out and how it works. I will say this. We've heard the statistics, and some people debate the statistics about divorce, that it's about 50, 60%. There are some that debate that, but there is no debate in this. They have done studies. Those who try to have a relationship with the Lord and stay faithful in church, their chances of divorce drop down drastically. Okay, so the more we're hearing it, the more it's a part of us and we're learning, the better it is, and we want to make sure that we do that. Now, when it does come to marriage, because there are two people involved, sometimes things happen because one spouse does something, the other, it's kind of out of their control, and I understand that. But what we need to do is do everything we can to put ourselves in a position of having a successful marriage and family. Like John Adams said during the Revolution, Revolutionary War, when our country was trying to get away from Britain and found our own country, John Adams came, his wife asked him how it was going, and he said to her, he said, I cannot guarantee that the war will be successful. He goes, but I can guarantee that we can put ourselves in a place that guarantees we should be successful. And that's really the point. Let's do all we can to do what we're supposed to put ourselves in a place where we can be successful in our marriages and in our families. Tonight, as we start off, we're going to look at really, I think, other than the Lord, the foundational relationship in the family, and that is the relationship between the husband and the wife. That is, after all, isn't that where the relationship, the family started? The family started when a man and a woman got together and got married, and the family started from there. And that relationship is the core relationship. The success of your family overall, the success with your children, really, the one thing you've got to be able to point to is say there's a strong marriage relationship in that family if that thing is going to go. And that doesn't happen on accident. That relationship must be guarded. That relationship must be cultivated. That relationship must be worked on. As we read the text, there was a famine in the land, so Isaac goes to Gerar and to sojourn at that time. God kind of lays out for him and tells him, you know, this is going to be the land one day you're going to get. This is what I promised to Abraham and your seed after you. And he says, just stay here and dwell in the land. As he is in the land, he realizes these people are godless and they're wicked. And his concern is, because he looked at his wife and said, you know, in our term, we would, you know, she's hot, okay, she's off the chart. And he's concerned that the men are going to say, wow, look at her, and kill him to get her. And so when they ask, like, hey, who's she? Instead of saying, that's my wife, he says, that's my sister. Now, by the way, where did he get that from? Anybody know? Got that from his dad. Dad said the same thing about Sarah. Now, when his dad said it about Sarah, she was quite a bit older, so she must have taken care of herself or did Botox. I don't know what she was doing. Okay, but he said, wow, she is off the charts, and they're going to kill me for her, and so I'm just going to say she's my sister. Well, after a while, one day they're in town together, and the king just happens to look out the window, and he sees them. And Brother Pichardo, I don't know what they were doing. The Bible uses the word they were sporting, okay? I don't know what that means, but based on what the king saw, he said, that's not his sister, okay? So whatever sporting was, it sounds like it was fun, if you're married. If you're not married, stop. Don't think about it, okay? And it's like, whoa. And he calls him up there and says, listen, bro. He didn't say bro. He said, listen, that is not your sister. That is not how brothers treat their sisters, okay? You ever see a couple, and if you do it, that's fine. You say, they call each other mama and papa. You know, oh, hey, come to mom. You say, you're not my mother. Trust me on that one, okay? You're my wife. Sporting, that's what we're talking about. But sporting, there was something in the relationship that he saw between them that made it pretty obvious that they were husband and wife. And not only that, they enjoyed each other. Now, let me say this. That's how it should be for a husband and wife. You ought to enjoy each other. Say, all the time? Sometimes you get derailed. But you ought to enjoy each other. There ought to be that strength in that relationship. They were flirtatious enough that the king's like, I know what's going on. By the way, ladies, you know, men love sports. Now, sports in our society is becoming a little bit of a god, and most of those guys don't have enough, you know, if they weren't playing sports, they'd be asking you if you wanted extra fries with your Happy Meal. They have no morality. They have, it's just a bunch of junk. But men like, listen, but I'll tell you what a man really wants. He wants that close relationship with his wife. When they were younger and they got of age, he wanted a girlfriend. Now that he's married, he ought to still have a girlfriend. Now, before you take that to task, let me define the girlfriend. The wife is the girlfriend. Okay, so let's make sure. Brother Meyer said I could go have a girlfriend. You know, it's like date night. They have a date night every week. My wife doesn't approve anybody I want to take out. No, I meant take your wife out. That's what we're talking about. But there's something about that relationship that ought to be enjoyable. There's something about that relationship that ought to just be fun. It ought to be exciting. It ought to be real. But we kill it, don't we? Some people have said, referring to the verse, that that's man's favorite sport, his wife. By the way, ladies, you ought to want that close relationship also. The problem is, although we know we should have that close relationship, although we know that's the foundation of a marriage, we more often than not don't have that relationship. But you can. But like anything else, you got to work at it. And if you're going to have that close relationship, there's some things you need or can do. This is going to be very practical. It's not earth-shattering. I think it'll be helpful. Let me give you, I'm going to look at two perspectives tonight. We're going to look, first of all, from Isaac's perspective, and we're going to look, second of all, from probably the number one authority on it, Solomon. First, I want us to look at two things from the life of Isaac we ought to have in that relationship. By the way, it ought to be close. It shouldn't be, I got to go home to the old lady tonight. I hope she's not your old lady. Okay, by the way, if you call her old lady, you wonder why she acts like that. Okay, oh, that's my old man. Oh, maybe he is old, but if he is old, you probably need to look in the mirror because you're just as old also, okay? But that ought to be like, I want to be home. I want to be around that individual, and we lose that sometimes. How can we do that? Well, from Isaac, we learn this. He believed in the attractiveness of his wife. He thought she was it. By the way, every married man and every married woman, so it's not just for the men, at one time you thought that about your spouse. You thought they were the greatest person in the world. He thought she was so beautiful that if he went into that city, that the men would see her and automatically kill him so they could get at her. That's how beautiful he thought she was. See, what happens is we get married, and that attraction, that love we have for our spouse, we start to let that wane. Say, look, what about him lying about his wife? The action was wrong. He shouldn't have lied. But I like the attitude behind the action. It's like, that's my wife. She is gorgeous. Now, he shouldn't have lied about it. And there's a little bit of, I guess, a sissiness there if you think about it. I mean, he probably should have said, if they're going to kill her, they're going to have to go through me first. If they're going to kill me, well, they're going to have to go through him first anyhow. So I was like, bring it on. But he thought she was the greatest thing in the world. In the Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 8, and we're going to look at the Song of Solomon in a few minutes, he says this, if I know not, O thou fairest among women, go thy way forth by the footsteps of the flock. Solomon, in his courtship here, says, she is the best looking person in the world. Listen. You were attracted to your spouse at one time. You need to stay attractive to your spouse. See, the problem is what happens, we start looking around. By the way, you have no right to look at others. Okay? You're married. And by the way, let me just say this. As you get a little older and you start, and your wife has children, you have no right to compare her to some 20-year-old that hasn't had a child in her life. And by the way, oh, but she's more beautiful. Okay, but her attitude is different too. Okay, quit looking around. You ought to be grateful for the one that God gave you. And you can stay attracted to him if you want to. Be nice and kind to each other. See, we just, you know what the problem is? We look at too many soap operas and too much garbage on television. We do. You see some stupid thing and this married couple and they see their old boyfriend. They realize how happy they could have been. And this one's making me miserable and it's all me. By the way, that is not how life works. You don't meet somebody and everything's in upheaval and 4 days later you get married, you're gonna live happily ever after. No, misery's coming. There's a reason those type of shows don't have sequels, because if they did, it would be divorce court with Judge Judy. Okay, that's not how relationships work. Relationships take time and they take effort and they take couples working at it if they're gonna stay that way. Proverbs tells us this. I'm going to read the verses to you. I don't want you to turn to them because there's a part of one verse in a mixed crowd I don't want to read, all right? Say, you should. It's Bible. I know I'm a sissy. Proverbs 5, verse 15 says, drink waters out of thine own cistern and running waters out of thine own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad and rivers of water in the streets. Let them be thine. Let them be only thine and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountains be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. In verse 19, I'm going to read the back half. Your homework, couples, go home and read the first half and have a good time. Verse 19, and be thou ravished always with her love. He says, listen, don't go looking somewhere else. You have what you need right in front of you. That's called your wife. And if you're married, that's called your husband. Be excited about them. Listen, don't let anything take that love away. We had a wedding yesterday, Brian and Erica, and they're out of town now, and I hope they have a great time. And we have Edgel and, I was going to say Ariel, not Edgel and Ariel. Edgel and TT are getting married in a month. Okay, and then in November we have Joy and Chris. And then we have a couple others. I don't know if the dates are on the calendar yet, so I'm not going to say anything. But listen, they are in love. They are raring to go. If they're still in that kind of love 5-10 years from now, it's because they've worked on it. And by the way, you can be in love 5-10 years from now. You can be love 30 years from now. Dr. Hawking, how many years have you been married? Are you still in love? Oh, boy. Good. 60. I'm not even 63 years old. I could be your son. Would you like to adopt me? Thanks, Dad. Okay, still in love. Listen, but you have to work at it. You have to believe your spouse is the greatest thing in the world. Here's what's hard about that. You live with each other. I mean, before, you got together and everything's wonderful, and she goes home, and you go home to your house, and they go home to their house, and everything's still wonderful. Listen, when you got married, you're both going to the same house. So you see everything. You know everything. But can I just tell you something? That doesn't mean anything. Yes, there's frustrations. Yes, there's irritations. But that relationship can be great if you want it. Realize what you have. I like what God was going to take Ezekiel's wife away. Hold on. That was not a prophecy from God, okay? God told me, Ezekiel, you better get your glasses out. Oh, you have them. Good. Okay, let me retrace that, PA man. Ezekiel in the Bible, the guy Ezekiel that lived hundreds of years ago, God was going to take his wife away, not Rosie. Okay? But look at what Ezekiel thought. Ezekiel 24:16, son of man, behold, I take away from thee the desire of thine eyes with a stroke. You know, how did he describe his wife? Said it was somebody he loved to look at. He must have thought she was good looking. He must have thought she was it. She must have thought, oh boy, because they worked on it. And so believe in that. Number two, next underneath that, he believed in the importance of that relationship. You know what's very telling about Isaac than his father or his brother or his sons? He only had one wife. He only had one. Abraham didn't. Jacob definitely didn't. Yeah, a lot of them didn't. He had one. It says when he first met her, and it was kind of an arranged marriage, it says right off the bat, he loved her, and I guess we can look at it and say, oh boy, he did. There was a very important relationship. Husbands and wives, make sure you understand, and Brother Mike Johnson said this at the couples retreat, the most important human relationship you have on this earth is with your spouse. Nobody else, not your children. Don't let those little boogers cut in on your marriage. Okay, you let them distract your marriage, and then later on they split, and you guys are left at the house looking at each other and like, man, they blew our relationship 20 years ago. Don't let them do that. So unless they try to get involved, say, you get out of here, you'll be out of the house. You'll be out of the house long after mom and I are still together, and she's it, and you're second. You say, my children won't like that. You know, actually, children like that. They like that the parents are striving to have a good relationship. But you make that the most important human relationship, not your in-laws, okay? By the way, not just your mother and your father, those in-laws, your brother-in-laws, your cousin-in-laws, and all those. They're always, sometimes, and not, I was going to say they always, but that's like an adjective, you know. Sometimes they try to worm themselves in. Listen, say, this relationship, you're not driving a wedge between us, okay? So don't let people do that. Keep that relationship primary. Do you know you entered into a vow at marriage? A covenant and a commitment, and you got to keep that. I heard a story. It's pretty good. See, men and women see things differently. There was a courting couple many years ago, and they were in an old country town, and it was a beautiful country night. So they were sitting out on the old porch, you know, farm. You think of that, and as him and her were sitting down on the porch, in the background, an old country church, you could hear choir practice. That's what she was listening to. Now, he was sitting there, and he was listening to a cricket under the porch. And she said, do you hear that? Isn't it sweet? And she's thinking about the choir. And he's thinking about the cricket. He's thinking that would make good bait for fishing. And he's like, you know, it is sweet because he's thinking about cricket bait. She goes, boy, that's really nice. And he's, again, thinking of the cricket. He goes, it is nice. She goes, doesn't that sound so beautiful? And he said, she's thinking of the choir. He's thinking of the cricket. He goes, you know, that does sound beautiful. But you do know they make that sound by rubbing their legs together. The cricket, not the choir, okay? We see differently. Many different areas. Ladies are going to see things one thing. Guys are going to see things another way. But let me say this. When it comes to your relationship, you guys need to see that thing spot on together. You can't be divided in this. That is the most important relationship you will ever have. Make sure you keep it that way. Ask yourself two questions. If you're married, who is the most important human being on this earth to you? And what is the most important human relationship that you have? If you're married and you don't say your spouse, then you need to rethink yourself. So that's from Isaac. Let's look at now from Solomon. Solomon knew a lot about marriage. You say, how? He had a lot of wives, okay? Although Solomon, towards the end of his life, is not the best example to follow. When he wrote the Song of Solomon, of course, the Song of Solomon is inspired by God, he was a good example at time. And it is a love story between him and the Shunammite, who became his bride. It tells of their love for each other. By the way, if you don't believe in romance, then you need to read the Song of Solomon. Okay, now if you're younger and you read through it quickly. You don't need to read through all of it. There's no Bible study for you. Wait till you get married, and then you can look in the Greek, Hebrew, and Spanish, whatever version you want to look in. But that's a very important relationship, and it ought to be a romantic relationship. In the book are some very practical helps for the relationship between the husband and wife. Turn over to Song of Solomon, please. It's the last book of the poetry books, the Song of Solomon, there. Written by Solomon, telling of a love story he has with a lady, Shunammite, who came his wife. But I want you to notice, we're going to look at several verses. I want you to notice as we start, Song of Solomon, chapter 2, verse 15. It says this, and by the way, I've heard a lot of messages on this, and I've heard them so far out of context, it's not even funny. It says, take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vineyards have tender grapes. Now, they spent a lot of time in vineyards. They both kind of like that, but in the analogy of marriage, they're using it here. I've heard people read this verse like, it's the little foxes that spoil the vine, you know, and they're like, it's this, and they'll apply it to all kinds of stuff. But in the context, it's in the Song of Solomon, which is talking about what? The love relationship. The relationship ultimately between a husband and a wife. And so what really is the principle here? It's usually the little things that destroy the marriage. You say, well, there's big things that happen. Usually the big things happen because the little things aren't in order. And when the little things aren't in order, that builds and builds, and the big things start to come. And because you've not done the little things, you can't correct the big things. And so he's saying, be very, very careful for the little things. Don't let them wedge their way in. Don't let them get a foothold, because they'll ruin the whole vineyard. They take out a little at a time, and they ruin it. And so we need to be very, very careful about this. What does Solomon tell us about several things, and we'll be done in a few minutes here, about what we can do to keep in love, and as Isaac did, we can keep sporting together as husband and wife. I would say this, work on building a strong, deep, bonding love, a bonding love. In Song of Solomon chapter 1 verse 7, he says, tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest, where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of my companions? He is just in love with her, down to his very soul. By the way, if you read the Song of Solomon, it said, man, those are some mushy things that don't make a lot of sense. They don't in our context, but in their context, in their day and age, I guess that was the romantic thing to say. But they had a deep, abiding love. Love is a commitment to each other. When we get married, what happens is we start to let other things creep into that commitment and start to kind of chop away at that love we're supposed to have for each other. Sometimes guys get the mentality, I've conquered. I'm married. I got that off my checkoff list. And she's in the bank. You know, banks sometimes go bankrupt. You know that, right? Sometimes there's a run out of bank and there's nothing left. You better be very careful about that. Ladies, sometimes you take other commitments in the family and the children and all the things of life, and you let those eat, and it kind of takes away from that main relationship you have, which is your husband. We must have commitment. We must have that strong relationship. How often do you tell each other that you love each other? I heard a story, it was a true story, about 25, 30 years ago, there was a chaplain for the Dallas Cowboys, and one of the wives of the players came in and said, you know, my husband and I were struggling mightily. He never tells me that he loves me or he cares for me anymore. And so this chaplain had guts, because this football player is a big guy. He went and talked about it. And the husband seriously said, you know, when we first got married, I told her I loved her, and nothing's changed. It's like, I don't need to tell her anymore. That doesn't work. Believe it or not, they actually want to hear it. They actually want you to let them know that you care about them still. See, if you're not doing that, you know what you're saying? I'm taking this relationship for granted. I'm not trying to build it. I'm not trying to make it stronger. We need to make sure we do those things. If you love each other, you think about each other. By the way, you get to know each other well. The longer you're married, the more you ought to get to know about each other. You know, what they like and what they don't like. It's like, you know, we have the newlywed game or whatever. We'll do it at the thing, or the oldie wed game. Like, I used to be the host, and I'd ask questions. Sometimes I'm like, look, I need to introduce you to. You don't even know each other. Okay? And that's a joke, because we ask funny questions. But listen, you ought to know things about each other. Now, sometimes we use those to bad advantage, don't we? We know what irritates our spouse, and so if we're trying to get to them, we'll do that thing that irritates them. But we ought to know what they are so we can help them, and that's the way we show them. Know each other, meet each other's needs, become best friends. Listen, you used to love to go out. Now you're married, you never go out. And don't use the children as an excuse. Pay for a babysitter. You need time. Well, we're already married. Why do we need? We're together all the time. Listen, outside of the family, outside of the house, outside of the responsibilities, outside of the children, you need time together. That's the most important responsibility. That's the most important relationship. You got to work on building that love. And so often we don't. We ought to say complimentary things to each other. Look at Song of Solomon chapter 1 and verse 9. Now, again, I would not say this to my wife. Even though she's a farm girl, she might slap me on this one. Look at verse 9. I have compared thee, O my love, to a company of horses in Pharaoh's chariots. If I called my wife a horse, I'm not going there. But obviously, in their culture, that was something beautiful. You know what, honey? You remind me of a Clydesdale. Listen, that's not going to work. You know, have you ever seen Secretariat? You guys have a lot in common. Be very careful. But that in the context, that was something, I guess, in their day that was appropriate. Thy cheeks are comely with rows of jewels, and thy neck with chains of gold. Now, that's better. Okay? Now he says, you look good with the jewelry on. You don't look like the horse anymore. The point is, they said complimentary things. It's okay every now and then to say, hey, you look nice. By the way, let me say this. No man ought to ever say that to another woman. Oh, that dress is off the hook. Listen, if your wife finds out you said that, your head's going to be off the hook. Say nice things to another woman. You ought to go by and say, you're ugly. Just kidding, don't say that. That's reserved for your spouse. Like every now and then, wow, you know, that's, you know, you did this or do that. Say complimentary things to each other. You used to. By the way, I'll give you a little, if you're trying to get them to do something that they're struggling with, it's like anything else. If they do it, compliment them, they'll do it again. That's in Proverbs. As the finding pot for silver and the furnace for gold, so is a man to his praise. It purifies, it changes them. But let's say nice things to people. And by the way, if someone's inappropriate and says something inappropriate to you, don't accept it. Ladies, you're at work and some guy says something about the way you look and it's inappropriate, you don't accept it. You say, you know what, I'm married, I appreciate if you didn't talk to me like that. I had a buddy, we were at work, years ago when we were younger, we were in the warehouse, and a lady came out, and I don't know if she was trying to hit him on or not, I don't think he was handsome, but I don't judge guys anyhow, but she came up and she said, wow, you smell really nice, what's the name of that cologne you have on? And he said, it's called happily married man. I like that. Okay? But don't you give compliments to each other, but don't take those from people, and be very, very careful what you say. Okay? I think we ought to be clean and neat and look the best we can for our spouse. Smell nice. Proverbs, look, Song of Solomon 1:3. Because of the savor of thy good ointments, thy name is an ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. He goes, you smell good. Now, I joke around. The grandkids come over, you know, they're running in the backyard, and they do all kinds of stuff, and they'll come over, you know, they want to give you a hug, and it's like, man, you smell like a yak. Now, I don't know what a yak smells like, but I don't think it's good. And they smell awful, and it's like, it's, you know, they've been playing outside, and it's there, we'll baptize them, and they'll be fine, but I joke around with them. But listen, can I just tell you something? You shouldn't do that with your spouse all the time, okay? Look, yes, you did that before you were married. Why can't you do your best? Now, I'm not saying you need to walk around your house in high heels and, you know, a dress and all that 24 hours a day. Okay? But, you know, listen, you ought to also not look like you just fell out of a garbage truck either. Okay? If you're working, I understand that. But you ought to want to, when you're doing things, at least look, you know, smell nice. And don't use the 5-gallon stuff, all right? But just, you want to be, the point is, you want to, look, what happens is, if you go to work and if you work in an office, everybody in the office is at their best, okay? And by the way, don't fall for that, because if you went home with that person, they wouldn't be at their best either, all right? They'd smell like a yak. But I'm just saying, we get fooled, but listen, let's be our best for each other. Let's do what we can. I think we also have regular times together, alone. Song of Solomon 2:10, my beloved spake and said unto him, me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. He says, you know what? We need to get away. And you do. The marriage relation requires that you get away alone, as we've already mentioned when we talked about date night. It doesn't mean you're always just sitting around the house. Find reasons to be alone together. Find reasons to get away together. We have the couples retreat every year, and I know sometimes your work schedule, you can't come. But if I was a married couple, if I could swing it, I'd do it. Okay? Say, but we have the kids, and you have to worry about, listen, the kids are the kids. They'll be fine. Get someone to watch them and get away with your spouse. Maybe your anniversary. Get away. Pick a day. I heard someone say this one time. It's not practical for all of us. All of this isn't practical for me. But he gave a little outline. He said, number one, daily, at least spend time talking to each other alone every single day. Just daily. He said, weekly, have a date night out, away together. And then he said, monthly, have a day where you guys just get away for the whole day together. Now, with our work schedules and all that's going on, that one to me, you can't do. But there's at least once or twice a year, my wife and I just take a day and we're out together the whole day alone. One of them's our anniversary. If we can squeeze another one in somewhere, we do it. Okay? It's just, it's what we do. Why? I don't want to be around the kids all the time. I love the kids. I love the grandkids. But she's the one that I married. I didn't marry the grandkids. And so I want to make sure that we're still together and we enjoy going out and being alone together. And then it says yearly take a vacation. Now, I know you're not alone when you take a vacation, but you need to get away with the family all together. That also shows your spouse that you're committed to the family. Next, be possessive of each other. Song of Solomon chapter 2 verse 16. My beloved is mine and I am his. Now I'm not talking about jealousy. Jealousy is destructive, but there ought to be a possessiveness. Husbands ought to be protective of their wives, okay? That's why I say, wife, if you're at work or something and you have a text with somebody and they even go a little overboard with a text, a little innuendo or just a little bit off key, you ought to tell your husband, let him deal with it. That won't happen anymore. We used to work at Solo Couple. We were in Bible college, and during the summer they would let some of the girls work there. And they had a girl in the back that worked there. She was engaged. Now, she never told us, but a guy there knew she was engaged, and he made an inappropriate comment to her. Now, her fiancé, I knew him. He did not work at Solo Cup. He worked somewhere else. We got off at 6 in the morning because we were all working third shift. I saw him in the parking lot, and he waited for that guy. And he came to him, and he very kindly, in a Christian manner, said, that's my fiancé. You will never talk to her like that again. He goes, and if you do, next time I come out here, we will not be talking. I'm okay with that. He's saying, that's my girl, and you ain't talking to her. Now, I'm not saying we go out there and get it, but I'm just saying we ought to be. That's not my old. That's your wife. That's mine, and you're hers. There's something healthy about that. It shows that you guys are committed to each other. Be protective of each other. And then lastly, and we're done, learn how to communicate with one another. By the way, you know what the killer of communication is? If Lucero, if you're here, don't text me. He does it every time I pull my phone out. I hope he's in patch. Right here. You can't talk to each other because you... Maybe I'm just not busy enough. I don't get a lot of text. I know other pastors, you know, and I pick them up at the airport and stuff, and they're constantly on the phone. I think I've just trained people. If you have an emergency or you need something, I am there. But if you don't bother me with text. Now, sometimes they'll send me some funny things, and I'm okay with that. But you know what I'm talking about. You know, my toenail fell off. Pray for me. No. It'll grow back. I don't need to pray for you. Okay, now, my wife left. Pray for me. That I will. Let me know. But your toenail, just go to the doctor and deal with it. Okay? And I'm not being facetious here, but we spend so much time on this thing. And so, look, you need to actually, look, we do it. We were my wife, we're in the room one night, and we're there, you know, we're already laying down, and we needed something, so we'll text one of the kids in the other room. It's like, why get up when you could just text them? Hey, bring me a glass of water. My wife, well, we're sitting there laughing at each other, like, are we really that bad? And I'm like, you know what? It works. It's better than opening the door and saying, hey, bring me some water. Just text them. Bring me water. I want ice. Okay? I won't tell you which one of us did it, but it's the one that wears dresses. Okay? But, you know, let's communicate with each other. That means talking. All throughout the Song of Solomon, they're talking. In the Ladies' Journal magazine, they surveyed a bunch of ladies. They had a survey of the ladies that read their magazine. They said, "What are the biggest problems in marriage?" They gave two. One of them is money. I can bear witness to that. Not personally in my marriage. I'm saying, I've talked to enough people. And the second one they said is communication. The USA Today did a poll several years ago, and they asked married couples, what do you think is the number one key to a good marriage? You know what they said? 85% said the key to a great marriage is communication. That's talking to each other. The sign that you are in trouble is when you quit talking to each other, when everything's held inside. That's the sign that you are in big, big, big trouble. What are two things that kill conversations? One of these is usually a guy problem. The other is usually a lady problem. And we'll end with this. The first one is nagging. That is primarily a lady problem. Guys can nag too. Always getting, yeah. Like I say, and it's true. And it's wrong, Brother Bichardo. And I'm wrong, and I'll admit it right now. But it is what I am. If I wanted to do something, and I was thinking of doing it, and my wife were to say, why don't you do that? I'm like, nope, don't want to do it. I planned on doing it. I was going to do it. But the fact that you said it like that, I'm not doing it. So she gets it. She goes, hey, Steve, whatever you do, do not take that trash out. I'm like, I'm taking it out right now. Don't you tell me what to do, woman. So see, you can play this to your favor if you think about it, ladies. Proverbs says this. It's better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and an angry woman. Or it says, like, water dropping is a woman that just, neck. Don't nag, okay? Here's the guy, anger. This is a guy's problem. We just blow up at everything. And then it's like, why do they want to talk? That's probably why they nag, right? Okay, so we'll give you girls a little pinch there. But we both have issues that keep us from communicating. Let's just communicate. That's why you got to be able to talk. When you get to the point where you feel, I'm not going to even talk to my spouse about anything, that's a very dangerous place to be. Okay? Communicate. What was the whole point tonight? I have no idea, but we had some fun. The whole point is this. The most important relationship in your life is your marriage relationship. And it does us no good to talk about the family if we're not going to put the foundation stone in place. And the foundation stone is you, husbands and wives. Sometimes you have to rekindle it. You have to look back and say, you know what? We love each other, and this is why. And we've let this stuff get into our marriage. Let's clear it out. Let's fix it. You say, well, our marriage isn't what it used to be. Can I just tell you? It can be. You still can have that. You just got to identify the little things and start making the steps. And by the way, let me say this, and I am done. If your spouse, you know, you hear something and say, aha, they're going to start doing something just because they heard that tonight. That's okay. Don't say that. I know why you're doing it. You heard that in church. Okay? Take it. Throw them a bone. Say, thank you. It's like, you know what that means? It means they're listening. It means we're trying. It means we still care. We do want the relationship to go, and that's why we're taking a step, and you ought to be thankful for that and accept it. Isaac and Rebecca had a good relationship. Now, we're going to talk about them next week when we talk about child rearing, and it won't be so good. But their marriage, they were married. He didn't have another wife. He stayed with her. And they enjoyed each other's company. And that's what you ought to strive for in your marriage. You ought to strive for, you know what? I always want our marriage. And by the way, does that mean we never have bad seasons? No, you'll have a rough time every now and then. We're human. But as you look at your relationship, you know what? I'm glad I'm married to this person. I'm glad that and we're going to work to keep that to where it should be. Let's pray this night.